The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the weekly podcast all about motorcycle road racing. I'm your guest host, Jim Race, and I'm covering for Bob Hayes, who is on a business trip in Vegas, baby. This is episode number 54. This is Friday, April 21st, and we've got a few different things to talk about. We'll talk about World Superbike coming up this weekend at the Ricardo Tomo Circuit in Valencia. And we'll have an interview with Liam and Bob from earlier this week that's really cool. And I might even tell you a little bit about me and talk about some local club racing and what you can do to support it. But first, I'd like to give a shout-out to number 74, Daijiro Kato. The 19th yesterday was the third anniversary of his tragic death at Suzuka. And Fausto Grassini today actually contacted his wife and father to share with them on this sad anniversary. So everybody's still thinking of Daijiro. Wish you were still around. And I'm sure the GP riders themselves are also thinking about you today. The Spanish round of World Superbike starts up this weekend at the Ricardo Tomo Circuit outside of Valencia, Spain. Last year's winner, Troy Corser, will be on hand. Lap record there was set by Neil Hodgson in 2003. Gianluca Nannelli will be substituting for Frankie Keeley, who had that bad get-off last weekend and broke his pelvis and a couple of ribs, so he's looking forward to that. Frankie's doing pretty well, and we wish our best for him. On top of that, Giovanni Bisai is also going to be riding a World Superbike this weekend for Tenkate Honda. He is just a hoot. If you've ever seen him race, if you've ever seen some of the things that he's done, he is just an absolute great rider to watch. He's filling in for Carl Muggeridge. We'll also have, of course, Bayless out there on the Ducati, Haga out there on the Yamaha, and your usual host. The Valencia circuit is a great circuit to watch races at, and I think it's going to be a heck of a race. So tune in or go visit and watch a great race. All right, well, if you can bear this for a little bit, I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. Again, my name is Jim Race, and my last name is spelled just like it sounds. I met Bob on rideon2.com, which is a website that I work on with a couple other folks. Hope you guys can come on, drop on by. Yeah, that is rideon2, the words rideon2.com. I am an AFM racer. I race with the AFM. It's a club in Northern California. It's the oldest road racing only club in the United States. And way back when they started, which was over 50 years ago, they were actually the FIM representative for the United States. They've had some great riders come out of there. A guy named Kenny Roberts Sr., who some of you may have heard of, started his first race with the AFM. Cal Rayborn was another racer. There's a whole list of them. Currently, Steve Rapp, who races with Jordan Racing in the AMA, he was our number one plate holder for a few years back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Tracks we race at are Sears Point, who lots of you folks may have heard of, Thunderhill, which is a really cool, pretty large course, and Buttonwillow down in the middle of nowhere in Central California. And on that note, we're talking about club racing. It's a great way to get started. Pretty much every racer that exists on the world tour these days has come out of club racing in one way or another. And I would highly suggest that you take a chance, if you have a local club race going on somewhere, to go out and visit and support the local racers. The cool thing about going to a club race and a regional race is that you can usually just walk around in the pits, something you don't always get to do at the larger races, World Superbike and particularly MotoGP, and just walk through the pits and have a chat with a racer, get some interest. You can help these guys out just by being there and supporting them, and you can see some great racing. So try and get out there and support your local club racers. So, next up, we're going to have the interview with Liam and Bob. They had a lot to talk about. Talked about World Superbike, talked about something that's being talked about a lot for whatever reasons, John Hopkins' behavior to the poor Suzuki MotoGP bike. And I'll let these two guys get on with it because they're always a good listen. Bob, Liam, take it away.
All right. We got Liam on the phone. Liam Schubert over in Spain. He's trying to become a MotoGP mechanic. He's been working in stuff. We've had him on the show a lot of times, so everybody knows him. How you doing, Liam?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Bob.
Awesome. So figured we'd touch base again with you. We had a long conversation last week about some of the things you heard and saw and did at Qatar for that round of the MotoGP races when you were down there. But we kind of, there was still more to talk about, really. So,
I think after a good break, there's a lot of things that come back into focus. You know, people tend to watch the racing when it's on the weekend, and then when it's over, you can discuss it a little bit on Monday or Tuesday. Hey, did you see the race? Wow, blah, blah, blah. And then if there's more than a couple of days lag between races, we got to find other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, that's true, we do. And they're taking their Easter break, so, you know, 3 weeks off or whatever. One thing I saw, and this has been on the on several internet forums, and I kind of think it's a whole big, you know, a big deal about sort of nothing. But when Hopkins' bike quit there in Qatar, and he kicked the side of it a couple of times, and, I mean, people are saying, you know, just how offensive it was and that he should be fired and just all kinds of stuff. And I was kind of like, you know, hey, this guy's frustrated. They went through so many engines that weekend, you know, so I kind of didn't think that much of it. How would you, if you're a mechanic working in that garage and you see your rider, you know, kicking the crap out of your baby, what would that make you feel?
Well, as a mechanic, I think I have a huge responsibility for the vehicle. Whether it's my fault or not, just by accepting the position of mechanic, that becomes your bike and your responsibility. And it really integrates you into the teamwork aspect of things because you do your best to prepare the bike for the rider so that he can do his best. And if something doesn't work out in that equation, who's at fault? So I can see John getting mad at the vehicle, not at his team. And I can see his team looking and feeling that same frustration and wanting to do the same thing. As a mechanic for years, sometimes you bang a knuckle or something strips or rounds out or just bad luck happens at the wrong time and you just feel like throwing a wrench or you get really frustrated and you want to make a loud noise with something. And it's natural. I think it's part of life and I think everybody is overreacting. I will say that the timing was horrible for that. On the world championship stage at this level of racing, the camera captures the best moments and it captures the worst moments. And I think kicking a motorcycle with your arms above your head is not one of the best moments. As a mechanic myself, I think that I wouldn't take it personally if he was kicking the vehicle. I would have felt the same frustration. And I don't blame him one bit.
Okay, that's sounds fair. I mean, it's probably along the lines of what I would have been kind of feeling myself, I guess, if it had been the roles reversed. Like I said, people are saying that he kicked the Suzuki logo, he kicked the Rizla logo, you know, and it's just, geez, I mean, he just, you know, was frustrated and kicked the motorcycle.
Right. I think they're reading a little too much into it. And another aspect that might lend some insight into the frustration is we're seeing now on the internet people reporting different things going wrong with the engines. So it might not even be an identifiable thing like, hey, we need to fix problem A so that this doesn't happen again. With the amount of engines they went through, maybe they thought they took care of problem A and then problem B surfaced. An important thing for people to remember, particularly about this series, is that these are all prototype race machines. And that means every week, every time there's a race, there are changes made to the vehicle. It's not the same bike. It's not thoroughly tested. Yes, there's a preseason test, but by no means is this the same vehicle that was running in Sepang or in Phillip Island. It may generally be the same, but who knows what has changed since then. They're constantly evolving, trying to go faster each time they get on the track. And I think some of the frustration coming from John is that he has been riding with Suzuki for years, and maybe there was a little bit of a buildup, but it's a prototype, and these things happen. So I think people reading into him kicking specifically at the logos, I think that's not it.
Yeah, Monday morning quarterbacking at its finest is, I would put that on that. And, you know, I think we touched on this a little bit on our last call, but I can't 100%, can't remember for sure if it was in a side conversation or something. So if this is a repeat question, well, you know, I apologize. But Suzuki went through 13 motors that weekend between the two riders. Do they bring that many to a race, or are they, you're talking basically, you know, an engine blew up and then it had to be rebuilt and blew up again, that sort of thing?
Well, I don't think that they bring that many motors to a racetrack, especially a flyaway race where they don't have their transporter and the storage facilities to properly house their engines. I think another more important question would be, what was the type of engine failure? Because some things can be repaired on site at the racetrack, in the garage or in a truck, depending on the severity. But if something blew a rod through a crankcase or something catastrophic happened in the bottom end, then no, I don't think they'd be able to rebuild it on site. I know some motors are not worked on at the racetracks. They get sent away to the team facilities or an HRC facility, for instance, for inspection when they tear the motors down. And I think with the Suzuki running the new system, from what I heard, there were fluids coming out of the bikes on occasion, and another credible source said that there were problems with the pneumatic air system for the valve actuation. So that's two completely different things, which may have external pieces that were failing, maybe not internal. We really don't know.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think if they had six motors or eight motors there, it's quite possible that they just shuffled them, repair, put it back in. Hopefully this is working now. I'm sure there are a lot of grassroots racers that know when you're at a racetrack, you do whatever you can to get that bike back out on the track. And if that means safety wire and duct tape or who knows what, you do what you can.
Right, and the same is going to an extent, continue through to MotoGP. Maybe a little bit less safety wire, but, you know, whatever works, right?
Right, whatever works. Because it is a prototype. It's not something where you can go to the garage next door and say, hey, can I borrow a shifter or a bracket or something that you might see, you know, in some of the smaller categories of racing in the States.
Right, where you've got guys riding the same motorcycles and they are, yeah, understandable. Yeah, so.
Interchangeable pieces.
There you go. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, another one that came up, and now it's escaping me. I cannot find the exact email, but somebody sent me an email with a question. And same story. We may have talked about this one last time as well, but where Hayden... they were somebody suggesting in a thread somewhere on the internet that Hayden threw away the race. Did we talk about that last time?
No, we didn't.
Oh, and this was, I can't find the email, and I'm looking and looking for it. It was a thread
somebody
somewhere. Yeah, and it was, supposedly somebody, you know, this guy, you know, I think, you know, the complete thing is almost not even worth, it doesn't even really deserve the time to talk about it because it's so obviously lame. But the thread got a lot of activity. I read the internet thread. I can't remember the board. I can't find the email, and I apologize for that. And I'll look harder and send it to you offline if I can. But the gist of it was that, yeah, I know the Haydens, and that the whole scenario was that because Rossi's going to Ferrari next year, supposedly, and this was part of the email, that this is a fact, right? Not just rumor, that
right.
Hayden wants to move to Yamaha, and it's somehow all related. It was a giant, huge conspiracy theory. It started getting a little silly, and that's probably why I've forgotten where it was at, because it was just too much. And on that, I mean, you know, and I know that, you know, this guy wants to win. He's not going to sort of tank something just to prove to Yamaha that he's, mad at Honda or whatever the theory was.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I think every competitor that gets out on the track wants to do their best. And at this level, particularly when they've worked hard their whole life and are lucky enough to be the select few that have made it to compete at this level, I don't think there's any throwing of races. Particularly if, with this scenario you mentioned, if Hayden was to switch to another manufacturer next year, I think he'd want to show them, hey, I did the best I could on this particular machinery, on the Honda. I'm a winner. That's why you want me next year, rather than I'm gonna let your team win so I can move to your team next year. That obviously Yamaha wants winners.
Exactly, and they're gonna want the, you know, because who would say, if he were to do that to Honda to get a ride at Yamaha, then who knows if 2 years down the road he's not doing it to Yamaha to get a ride at
right.
You know.
I think it's completely ludicrous.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely do. I just it would all make a lot more sense and be a lot more germane if I'd done a little more prep here and found the email before. But just before I called you, I said, "Well, I remember that," and I was wondering if you'd, you know, something like that that you'd made a heard of, and it did also kind of lend into the whole the rumors of Rossi going to Ferrari and the rumors of possibly of Hayden going to Yamaha, which both of which are. Pretty shaky at best at this point, you know, a little more than just...
I have to agree. My personal gut feeling tends to flop back and forth a little bit on Rossi moving to F1 because I don't think anybody can really guess his motives. And I think there's a lot more going on in the world of F1 than most motorcyclists realize with Schumacher potentially staying and Raikkonen wanting to be there. There's just a lot of action in that particular world, and there might not be space for Rossi.
That's a good point. That's a real good point. And probably not one that is taken into account often enough when, you know, when people start these things, is that, you know, yeah, they've got, Ferrari's got what, Massa and Schumacher, I think, this year, whoever it is. And yeah, mm-hmm. If he continues on, they may not have room for him.
I think we're just going to have to wait and see for the doctor to do his press release sometime. I think it was stated on Crash.net sometime before June is when we'll have an answer.
The always reliable Crash.net. So,
yeah.
But, and also, another thing that might be going through Rossi's head, we know he's a fierce competitor, and he, I think he's quite proud of the fact that he was the last 500cc champion, the first MotoGP champion, that he's won championships in 125, 250, MotoGP, and 500cc. I think he'd kind of like to have an 800cc MotoGP class championship under his belt as well. And to do that, he's going to have to ride at least in 2007. And you know, who knows, possibly through, you know, 2008 or something, depending on how he does in 2007. So
I agree. There's something about the thrill of competing on a motorcycle, just riding a motorcycle, whether you're competing or not, that's the tie that bonds all of us bikers together. And I think Rossi is such a supreme motorcyclist that it's not something you can just walk away from, particularly when the new challenge of the 800s shows up. And
right.
We've seen that the rookies this year are running strong in their first two races, and if they provide enough challenge for him throughout the rest of the year, I can easily see him being here next year and saying, "Oh yeah, all right, I got you on the MotoGP bike. Let's take you on the 800s." It's fun. It's fun for him. I think after watching a lot of the riders and a lot of the teams, everyone's it's so serious, and there's so much business and so much computers and riders staying in the garage until 7 or 8 o'clock every night discussing with their technicians, going over graphs and charts and time spreads, and it's just so serious. And Rossi seems to be the only guy that has a really boyish quality to him. His mannerisms, the way he moves and slides through the paddock, it's very, very interesting for me to watch, because the mentality is just so different than anyone else out there. And I think everyone's coming at him, you know, trying to win with brute force and strength and you know, a lot of power on the racetrack, and I'm not really sure where I'm going with this theory. We might have to chop it right out. But there's something about his approach that allows him to do well. And I think once the rookies have a better handle on the bikes. I think some of them are going to bring the same qualities because they're young enough to see, hey, this is what it takes. I think one thing that nobody really picked up on was how loose Stoner was riding his bike in Qatar. I saw it a lot myself coming out of corners, and I thought, wow, the kid's just out there riding. It looks like he's just having fun, and he's kicking butt doing it. And this, despite being sick and low sleep and everything else. So I think I feel a lot of potential coming from him.
Mm-hmm. That he's just very relaxed on the motorcycle and completely comfortable, yeah, and at ease and doing something that he would like to be doing in his free time no matter what, right? This is basically what you're getting at?
Right.
Yeah. I think that's an admirable quality in it, that he is going to do well. I was very impressed at Qatar. I'm looking very much forward to the Istanbul track, which I think shares more similarities to Qatar than it does to Jerez. So
I agree.
Yeah, some of the strengths that we saw, you know, every track is different. There's always, you know, the weather, the track itself, the surface, everything is so you can't, you know, just because one team did well at one track doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do well at the next. But, yeah, it is.
Yeah, definitely proven by the Yamahas after, yeah, Jerez and Qatar.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, whatever. I wanted to just, you know, kind of touch base with you again, say hello and chit-chat a little bit. And always good to have you on the show, Liam. We enjoy having you.
Okay. Well, I hope to be able to give you guys a nice report with a little bit of World Superbike info next week. I know it's not quite MotoGP, but there are quite a few GP guys now in World Superbike, and I'll be attending the Valencia race this weekend, which is technically in my backyard about 4 and a half hours away by train. So I'll be headed down there. Hopefully I'll be able to spend some time with Kenny Noyes so we can get an interesting update from him with his first world championship type race in World Supersport.
Right. Because he
can see what Barros is doing and everyone else.
Yeah, outstanding. Because Kenny Noyes is riding for David Checa in Supersport, correct?
Yes, which substituting for Anthony Gobert, which was substituting for Checa.
Oh, really? I didn't know that there was the Gobert linkage. Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, Gobert rode the Qatar round in World Superbike, and then again at Phillip Island, and now he is going to be running in the Spanish National Championship in the Superbike class. I think that it's technically called Formula Extreme here.
Mm-hmm. Which was Kenny's series, or is you know, Kenny rides in that series as well. And I watch the Supersport races, the World Supersport races, where Anthony Gobert was riding, but I don't know, somehow or another I missed that he was subbing for David Checa. And then when the news came out that Kenny Noyes was going to substitute for David Checa, they sort of skipped the Gobert link, and I just never picked it up. Huh? No, that.
Yeah,
would
I noticed that too.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to talk to you after that. And you know, World Superbike may not be MotoGP, but I'll tell you, this season of World Superbike, and to an extent, World Supersport, is going to be a super super exciting one. I mean, Supersport, you've got Sebastian Charpentier that's kind of, you know, just running away with it already.
Yeah, he's got a stranglehold already after two races.
Right. Yeah.
But we'll see.
Exactly, and the rest of the field is excellent, and then the Superbike is just, oh man, it's those races at Qatar and Phillip Island, which seemed like months ago, were just fantastic. So no, I'm looking forward to that, and yeah, we definitely want to do a call then. Hopefully I can get in on it. If not me, you know, maybe Jim Race can give you a call. But in any event, let's sign off for today, and we will talk to you again soon, Liam.
All right, take care, everybody. Thanks for listening to MotoGPOD, and keep your eye on the racing.
Man, I'm telling you, Liam sure has a lot of cool stuff to talk about, and Bob seems to bring out the best in him. Thanks, guys. Coming up this weekend, on top of World Superbike, we've also got AMA action from the beautiful Barber Complex out there in Alabama. And boy, is that a cool track. It's a little small, maybe, But the grounds are world-class level. They've got one of the greatest motorcycle museums on the planet, from what I've heard. I've never been able to go there, not yet, but I have plans to do so someday. And it should be fun. It seems like we haven't seen the AMA guys race in forever, a lot like World Superbike. They've had quite a break since Daytona. There's a couple of things going on out there, notably the return of Curtis Roberts. Who, you say? The red-headed stepchild, or not stepchild of. That's not a nice thing to say. Kenny, if you're out there listening, please ignore that. So I have a feeling that's probably going to get me in trouble. It should be a great race, though. Most of the teams had a chance to test out there. Of course, Matt Mladen loves the track. We'll have Neil Hodgson and Ben Bostrom, and Bostrom's first time back on that track in quite some time. Team Yamaha with DeSabo and Jamie Hacking and Eric Bostrom will be on there. I know that Jason DeSabo, when he was out there testing, had some great times on his super stock bike. He was running faster than a lot of the super bike guys, and his Formula Extreme bike, and he are also very comfortable on that track. So we look for good things out of Team Yamaha. Jake Semke comes from his Daytona 200 win, and he's got to be pumped and ready to go. So I'm looking forward to a good weekend, a busy weekend. And we'll see if we can talk about it a little bit maybe on Monday, or talk about it next Thursday. That's about it for this week. Thank you for listening. This is the first time I've ever recorded one of these. Bob's always done them in the past, and so hopefully my technical competence is approaching his level, and I'll hopefully get this thing up and have it ready for you on Friday the 20th. So thanks again for listening, and we shall talk to you again soon. If you'd like to get a hold of me, you can send me an email at race@motogpod.com, or come and talk to me at rideon2.com. Hello. That's rideon2, the words rideon2.com. You can also come over and participate in our MotoGP tipping competition. That's Australian for, just guessing who's going to win the damn thing. So thanks for listening again, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Where's this damn disclaimer? Here it is. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.